This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 230, Dance This AR Around. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a surprisingly chilly Friday afternoon with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin.
Hey, great to be chilling with you, Michael. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm just chilling, man, you know? Because I'm like getting ready for MoogFest, which is coming up in a couple of, I guess about 6 weeks now, 7 weeks.
Ooh.
And they finally released their full lineup of bands. So in my copious free time, I'm going to YouTube and finding music videos from each of the bands,
awesome.
Listening to those and going, okay, I want to see them. I don't want to see them. I want to see them. Maybe that one, right? To kind of build my game plan for who I want to see each night.
So that's all cool and all, but the question I have for you is, what kind of hardware are you going to be building this time?
I'm not doing the builder thing. I only did that one year. Because the first year I did it, it was like almost $600.
Yeah, it's what I remember. It was pretty significant.
And you got a piece of kit that you could probably resell for like $350. But I didn't resell it. I kept it.
Yeah.
The next year, it was $1,500.
What?
And it's been that ever since.
That's a little bit of a few clams there.
It's kind
of
steep.
Yeah. My goodness.
So I still have my brother from another mother.
Yeah.
32. Matter of fact, I can look to my right and see it. I really should plug it in again. Because it was fun, but I have no need of it, but I like it. Anyway,
yeah.
So we have an exciting show for everybody this week, and it's all about technology and AR and robots and things that are changing, but you found a whole slew of good things for us to talk about today, beginning with an article about how AR helps you see your business differently.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is very much in line with all the things that we've been talking about here for, dare we say, years?
Years.
I think we do. AR is a way to see your business differently and in a new way for many.
Literally differently.
Literally differently. So what I liked about this was, here is a way of leveraging AR for fashion and for allowing people to experience a fashion show wherever you might be. So if you're not on the runway or next to the runway, you could be at the airport and watching that fashion show in the terminal or on the runway via something called HoloMe. So it's a mobile app that allows for the person who's doing the fashion show themselves to be superimposed on whatever you're looking through on your phone, wherever you may happen to be, because of the green screen technology that they're using. And the thing that this reminded me of, Michael, was the kind of experience you can have with Skype and with Zoom and a bunch of these other video conferencing technologies, where you can kind of do that virtual green screen thing, and the camera will take a picture of you. You step out of the field of view, you come back in, and now all of a sudden you're on the moon or underwater or something like that. This allows for an AR experience very similar to that, where the person who is being filmed can be beamed directly into whatever environment you might be looking at from a real world perspective. What did you think when you first saw this?
Well, I thought this was really interesting, and mainly because my brain immediately went to the technical aspect, right? So I watch it. I'm like, okay, I got it. Yep, they're shooting the models in front of a green screen. Yep.
Yep.
Okay, now I see how they've converted those models into an AR video stream that you take and overlay in any environment, and that way you can see, you know, how does this look like in the evening when I'm, you know, downtown, or in the afternoon if I'm at the beach or whatever, and you can kind of get a perspective of the outfit in a real world setting and not just on the show on the runway. And then I was like, what are they doing and how are they dealing with the light sources that you need to have in play between the lighting that was done when the model was filmed on the green screen and the lighting that's done in the AR environment when you place them in the real world? Because I remember at WWDC when they were showing, you know, the latest updates to ARKit, the ability to address the different light sources, right? And that's really key here to have that perspective of light coming from the environment. And I was trying to figure out how well they did that, even though all the examples that they showed pretty much had the model kind of in really clean, well-lit environments, even if it was, you know, walking down the boulevard at night. It didn't have the feel to me of the model was walking down the boulevard at night. Oh,
I see. Right. Now I get you. Because if it were superimposed in a nighttime environment, it really should have changed the lighting as opposed to making them show up in a bright, bright way.
Yeah, I mean, that was and I didn't have there wasn't enough video or long enough clips of the video to see if it was just my perspective or if they were not doing it right. but the other part that I found interesting was the related article that was using AR in order to try on cheerleader outfits, and I had no idea that the way this was set up traditionally was they would send out a kit of clothing for the entire team to try on to get all the right sizes before they shipped out all the clothing.
Right.
And I was thinking, wow, that makes so much more sense to do it as an AR example compared to, you know, the cost of shipping all that clothing around, the loss that would occur, et cetera, and you still only had, you know, like six sizes that might fit. And you and I talked about the experience my wife had years ago at the
jeans place.
The Levi jeans custom fit jeans that they did in Atlanta, right? Where I was like, yeah, it was custom when you did the try on, but ultimately you ended up with a size 4 or a size 6, right? I was like, there's nothing custom here. What are you talking about?
No, I'm absolutely with you. And I thought this was really intriguing as well. So the article talks about $300,000 a year for this one cheerleader outfit manufacturer to manufacture those fit kits, ship them around everywhere, having the loss, you know, all they have to be washed and taken care of and da 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 da. $300,000 is a lot of money for a small business.
Oh, yeah.
And the notion of being able instead to invest in AI and AR, really, it's more AR than AI, but I could see where AI might come into play here too, for the to happen virtually could save a lot of time and money, could increase satisfaction, because as the article says, that the more these fit kits are tried on by various people, the fabric stretches and changes some size and dimensions, that get washed, that changes the fabric as well. So what you thought fit actually doesn't. So this really was an intriguing way of the application of technology in the fashion space in what hasn't happened as much before. But I was trying to remember, you may actually have seen me look at this too. I was looking for an app that I found that had something similar to it, and it was called M Taylor.
Yeah.
And I think we chatted about this once before as well. For me, I only got so far with the app because I didn't want necessarily all of my dimensions and everything else wind up being stored and shared in ways that maybe I wasn't super happy with. But the flip side of that is that the idea of custom tailoring, which used to be something that only the very affluent could afford, now through technology can start to be available for mass individualization and customization, and actually have a much better product and much better outcome for people as opposed to the off the rack versions.
Well, it's interesting you use the term mass customization. You know, one of the things that I do in the day job is dealing with Industry 4.0, and that mm-hmm. really is the basic concept there, right? Is how do you get to mass customization where everything is personalized, but you're doing it at a scale where it's as if everybody's using the same stuff, right? And the ability to drive that cost down with AR, get that perfect fit with the fit kit, right? And ensure that what they think they're getting is what they're going to get because of the accuracy of the AR measurements, et cetera, is just key to getting to the point where mass customization can be realized.
Right. So. Right. And that takes more than a village to do that. You need the whole supply chain to behave and to move where you need to go. So Industry 4.0 is certainly, an intriguing thing, isn't it?
So that's an interesting corollary. It takes a village to raise a child, but it takes a supply chain to make Girl Scout to make cheerleader uniforms,
or could be Girl Scout.
Could be anything, Girl Scout, really. Uniforms. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well, so speaking of it taking a village, our next article, super intriguing, is talking about the parental units and how they operate to help raise children. And I found this article, Michael, and I was so intrigued by it. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you because I'm eager to talk with you about it, like from multiple dimensions. So let me set it up for the audience. This Mashable article talks about a co-parenting app that in some cases is being, well, not in some, it's being marketed actually to the legal establishment as part of like a court apps, court tech, court kit, so that a judge might say, all right, you are in the process of a custody battle. Here's what we're going to do. Both of you are going to install this app. Both of you are going to use it to communicate. And both of you are going to allow the court to have access to location data, pickup times, amount of time that you're spending with your children to ensure that what the judge decided is fair and equitable is exactly what is happening, and that disputes can be adjudicated in theory in real time through the app. So it's to me, this is intriguing on about 17 different levels, but let's peel the onion on the first level. And the first level here is, wow, can you imagine here now that you can administer justice and evaluate compliance, gosh, where have we heard those terms before, with an app that reports back to the court?
Yeah, I did not like this app. is that no surprise? It's interesting because the app was actually written or at least designed by an ex-judge, right? Yep. And my first gut reaction was, as soon as I saw it, was, oh my God, you're going to give up the potential for any privacy in order to ensure that the judge can handle the caseloads, because they talk about in the article that right now, with all the different caseloads that the judges have, that mm-hmm. they get maybe 7 minutes to decide on a dispute. And so anytime there's a dispute between parents in a custody situation where there's joint custody and you know, the one parent doesn't show up on time and complains, or the other parent, you know, buys a puppy which was not agreed to, blah, 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 right? There's all these complexity in dealing with kids that it could require a trip to the court and you get your 7 minutes, but a judge gets to decide that they have access to so much personal data in order to deal with the fact that the courts are overloaded. That's my cynical view. It's not just the courts. Well,
right?
It's the people too. But if you're thinking about dealing with your kids,
yeah,
you will do whatever it takes and take the time it takes to deal with them. Right.
Well, sure, but things are messy. Right.
Yes.
And there are oftentimes problems. So if one of those problems might be that one party is supposed to have the kids on a weekend and that the kids are not transferred until midnight on Friday, you know, is that still the weekend? Well, yes. But should it have been midnight or should it have been 6 o'clock in time for dinner, which was part of the agreement?
Again, all good and valid concerns. However, if a couple agrees to a settlement, then do they have to give up all freedom to ensure compliance? Or can they be responsible adults, and if someone is non-compliant, then something occurs? Right. I just, my privacy concerns just go so high on the things that could happen with this type of app.
Granted, this wasn't Michael bait or.
Oh, I know it wasn't. I got that. But yeah, it was my immediate reaction when I saw it. But I did think, you know, it's interesting because you think about this same use case for other things, right? People right now who are under house arrest or under some kind of other arrest do have these wireless trackers attached to their ankle.
Absolutely.
And they give up a certain amount of freedom, obviously, but also privacy.
In exchange for freedom.
Yes. So they give up privacy for freedom. But when you think about it, you know, the kids in this case just want to grow up, right? And the parents are going to either go around the system because they're going to use a different messaging app instead of the one that they're required to give the "I can't believe you didn't show up" note, right? Or, which means then by definition they're out of compliance if they use a different app, right? And oh god, it raised so many hackles.
Well,
on the privacy side,
and it does for me, and I'm not taking the side that this is a worthwhile trade. Where I am going is, if you take as a given, and I think it's a fair given, that the penetration of smartphones in the population where this is the target is pretty high, right? There aren't many people walking around with a razor from, you know, whenever, that doesn't have these kind of capabilities. And the data that's on the phone could be mined, exposed, shared, either through court order, you know, or through an app like this, mm-hmm. that there is a way to speed discovery, decision making, potentially even fault finding, without it gumming up the system, the court system, because that's super inefficient for where things are. I mean, again, 7 minutes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that just blows
and
me away.
You don't need to go through the notion of having to require a carrier to divulge phone or text records in order to get to the heart of the matter, right? Were you where you were supposed to be at a certain point in time? So back to the gaming aspect of this, I know that I've been a fan since almost the very beginning of Foursquare, now Swarm. I still use that particular tool, mostly for my own purposes. And I could imagine a scenario where there might be a court order that says, right, Swarm, you need to now divulge all of the tracking and check-ins that had happened, right? Same thing could be done for Google. Same thing could be done for a variety of other things in order to determine where a particular person was, because they're always carrying their phone with them. And many of these apps are communicating with the home servers with the permission of the device holder, incidentally. And that could now become the tracker, right? So the reality here is that this particular, what's it called, co-parenter app is exposing some of that data in a shared fashion that says the two parents, as well as the court system and maybe their attorneys and who knows what else, can have near instantaneous access to this for compliance purposes. So I'm with you on the privacy side. I have a hard time with that too, but the expediency is super fast.
Well, you know, that's the challenge, right? I mean, it's the whole comparison that we constantly have and trade off between security and convenience, or in this case, it'd be privacy and convenience. You know, it's more convenient to the court to have expeditious results and reaction
judicial to system
to the judicial system, right? But is it? It becomes a great concept. I worry about practice again. As you and I've talked about, I used to do Swarm, and I have stopped for lots of reasons. And when I think of the court mandating it, right? Because that's what you're going to get to, is once this becomes even somewhat scalable, you will then have the court mandating the use of this type of thing. And the point you made is very well stated, that people have this type of device is almost ubiquitous. You know, a mobile device that has all this tracking and capability built in.
So flip this on the side for just a moment and say, we're not dealing with parents. We're dealing with the relationship between an insurance company and the insured. So as
that
an insurance
makes it
company,
even worse.
you could say, hey, I've noticed that you are traveling on these roads at 10 miles over the speed limit.
Yep.
I've noticed that you seem to frequent these fast food restaurants, which we know are not really healthy.
Every week. At Thursday.
Therefore, your insurance premiums are now such and thus.
Yeah. Right? Again, all of those are top of mind when I think about this technology.
You know, they could be used for a whole variety of things when you just do. And gosh, what was it? The number of data points to even individually identify someone, even if you don't know anything more about them.
It's like three.
Yeah, it's like ridiculously small.
Yeah.
So that was intriguing. Now, I know we're running short on time, but there's one other aspect of this that I got to bring up because this was just too much fun. And that was, you alluded to it before, on the notion of using the chat app built into the tool in order to ensure that people are being cordial to one another and to they're communicating effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the intriguing thing here is there's a little image from Co-Parenter in here that is talking about, I need the kids a little earlier.
Yeah.
Can they meet, you know, we got a new dog. And so the response was, new dog? I thought we talked about this. You're not getting them a dog. You're not going to be the fun parent. I'm going to be the mean parent. And then there's like, I'm starting to type a, this is not acceptable.
Yep.
And before hitting send, it says, this message sounds hostile. Do you really want to send that? So there's this is an intriguing protective aspect to all of this, an AI that kind of sits above the communications layer and may tone things down a little bit, you know, kind of an anger translator perhaps. And it reminded me of the Google capability some years ago that was to prevent drunken
texting.
Emails. Exactly.
Yeah.
To require
do this
you
complex
to do a math problem before hitting send, you know, after other things have happened. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts? What did this remind you of when you saw that?
Oh, again, I thought the anger translator one was a funny way of putting it in perspective. But there's how do I say this? I again worry about conditioning people.
Yep.
And it's funny because the app kind of looked like they were showing Apple's Messenger app. It did not look like a custom messenger, other than the fact that it was popping up this, "Are you sure?" You're getting kind of angry. Yeah. I believe people should be responsible for their actions. and I worry about the app telling me I'm being inappropriate in my language. As you know, I'm a First Amendment person too.
So the yes and to that is there are more and more controls, people and AIs being placed on communication, whether it's being done through instant messaging, whether it's through social networks, whether it's through comments on videos. This is getting more and more focused too. So the other thing that this grabbed me was, wouldn't it be intriguing to have something like this to help people? Because there are probably some people that just don't know that they're grating on somebody's gears. I mean, you would think that they probably do, but there, I'm sure, are a fair number of people that don't.
No, I've been in meetings recently where it's obvious that they're not.
Yeah, I mean, but wouldn't that be helpful to just say, hey, caution, this could be treated as harassment. Caution, this is a potentially rude in this culture.
Yeah, but language, but what I said was fine, and the app didn't complain, so why am I in trouble?
Okay,
right,
you're flipping the tables, aren't you? Table flipper.
Table flipper. I don't know if that was appropriate. Maybe we should ask the chat bot. No. I understand the use case, and I can conceptualize it and say, yeah, this makes sense under these conditions. I just worry that we then are taking responsibility away from where responsibility needs to be at times, and that we're also just setting a bad boundary condition. I don't know how to say it.
To me, it's a question of augmentation, right? I'm with you. If there's a full reliance on something like this, then you're like, yeah, absolutely. It's just, that's it. If it's an augmentation, you know, then that's a way of like your car saying, hey, don't go over into that lane because there's a car over there right behind you. And if you do, you're going to crash. Right. You can still do it. That's all up to you. You're the one with the steering wheel, but, you know, crash city. All right. Anyway, intriguing stuff, isn't it? Isn't this fun?
It's lots of fun.
So speaking of a couple other fun things that we wanted to touch on briefly, we talked about Jibo not that long ago. And
yeah, it's only been out for a little over a year.
Yeah, has it only been that short? Well, unfortunately, it's shutting down. And the article I saw, which was kind of fun, was that it was telling its people, hey, I'm shutting down, doing a little dance. And once that's done, it's a cloud service enabled robot that all the computing is not on the edge. It's in the cloud. And when it shuts down, you've got a piece of hardware. And that's about that. So,
yeah. Yeah. I saw this and all I could think of was Hal in 2001 going, Daisy, Daisy, and slowly winding down. But it was, I know I heard stuff about this a couple of different ways this past week. And I think it was on MacBreak Weekly, they were talking about one of the hosts there actually had one of these.
Oh, really?
And was like, oh, man, it's a bummer. And yeah, it happens. That's the benefit of cloud services.
Well, it's the benefit and the drawback, right? Yeah. You know, you put the functionality in the cloud. This is the sort of thing that's going to happen.
Yep. And you know, what's one of the key things when you think about the Internet of Things, right? I mean, one of the things that really makes the Internet of Things powerful is that we have ubiquitous communications of high speed networks for all these devices. But what do you do when the connection's not there? And that has to be designed into the product from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when the design of the product is designed to be 100% connected to a cloud service, it will stop eventually. Right. It's not a product that you're going to have forever.
It's not forever. Yeah.
So
it's not like a Game Boy. You can keep playing Tetris on, you know, years and years afterwards, right?
Yeah. Well, it's speaking of other companies that are shutting down. A couple of years ago, I think three or four years ago, maybe even five years ago at CES, I got to talk to the guys at Faraday Future, which, I mean, their car is just sexy looking, right?
Yeah.
It's when it comes to electric vehicle, they're trying to be another electric vehicle in the vein of Tesla. Cool, really stylish looking, etc. And it looks like they're done. They got out in front of their funding. They didn't deliver on a timely manner. They've been trying to cut staff to stay around, and it looks like they're pretty close to shutting down. They're laying off a significant amount of their employees again, and they pretty much are on hold starting on May 1st of this coming year.
Yeah, you know, starting an auto company is not a simple matter, isn't it?
It's hard. It's a lot of work. It's expensive. It's, I mean, we talked at the beginning. We talked about the supply chain and what you need. You need a supply chain to do all these capable and cool things. Well, a car is not something you can, pardon the pun, just make in a garage. it takes an army of people, designers. It takes supply chains for components and subcomponents, and you've got safety critical systems that require all kinds of certification and cost that drives. And we're getting closer and closer to autonomous vehicles. And when you get to that, that's even more dependent on a network effect of not just during the runtime, but in building the device. Right? You've got to have all the components that can talk to each other across different suppliers, across different makes and models, et cetera. This is hard work, and it's why we're starting to see the big players get into this in a meaningful way. I think Volvo just announced a new electric vehicle this past week.
Yeah, that Polestar.
Yeah.
So, that may or may not come to the United States, depending upon the whole range of other stuff, too.
Yeah.
But, this harkens back to the conversation we had last week, which was all focused around 5G and cloud computing. So if you have an autonomous car, you probably don't have all of it right in the car, because you need to be able to learn quickly and be able to learn from the masses, not just the individual car. There really just isn't a shortcut to how to build a car, is there?
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of shortcuts, I like that setup. That was really well done. I appreciate it. I've taken a look at shortcuts on iOS for some time now, and I think we've even talked about them. And one of the podcasts I listen to, one of the hosts is a gentleman by the name of, I'm going to mispronounce his name, and he even wrote this site. He's Federici Fetici. He does a site called Mac Stories, which has got some really cool content in it. But one of the things he's been doing is building a library of shortcuts for iOS. If you remember, in iOS 12, Apple took the Shortcuts app, which used to be the workflow app, and put it part of the operating system. And it's just getting more and more powerful, and I've been playing with shortcuts. We talked about the police one, right? For when you get pulled over, and there are shortcuts in here that are, you know, thousands of steps long. And one of the examples that we did before the show was the check out what music you bought last year and what music you listened to. So what are the top 100 songs from last year that you got on Apple Music, and what did you play a lot? What'd you think of that?
I liked it. I thought it was fun. It also showed that I'm not listening nearly enough to the music on my device. And I need to do a little bit more of that.
Yeah. Do you have an Apple Music account? Do you use Apple
Music? I do. Ah. I do.
I thought about it.
but?
I have a library of paid music that I like to pay directly to the artist as best I can, as much as I can. It's almost 20,000 songs. So yeah, having another couple million just means more music I'm not listening to.
Well, didn't have quite that many, so it was good for me.
Yeah.
But thanks for sharing that. We have to share that one in the show notes here too, because that was kind of a fun shortcut to see what did you listen to last year, and it just chunked through the phone and did what it needed to do.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Very cool.
And so I have something fun too.
Yes.
Actually, I have two fun things. So thing one is the new B-52s album from 1998, which makes it not new.
New-ish.
It was just released. So that's a good thing. So there's all kinds of fantastic songs. And so we chatted about that a little bit before the show. And the last thing that I've got before I dash for my next space is looking at all the new fun things that are happening at Disney for the Star Wars experience. I came across this great article on Inverse talking about how to build lightsabers, which was very much related to what we talked about last week too. Yep. About doing lightsaber fencing. And some of these are very affordable, and some of these are like $500 and more. So if you want your own custom lightsaber, go check out these sites.
Yes. Really cool. Very, very cool.
All right. That's what I got. I got to run.
Got to run. Have a great one, everybody. See ya.
Talk to you later. See ya. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.